Session number 10469, reel 2.
Brigadier Career, reel 2. You were just talking about the replacement of the brigadiers.
Yes. Well, I met Brigadier Evans and he told me to bring my whole battalion, less one company, back into the 7th Division admin box. At the entrance to the Ndoki Dock Pass, that is on the eastern side, was the 7th Division administrative area. All the soft stuff was there, the ammunition dumps, the ration dumps, the mule company lines, the ordnance depot, workshops, hospital, everything you can think of was in this administrative area at the mouth of the Ngoki Dock Pass, at the eastern entrance the Ngoki Dock Pass, and it hadn't got anybody much defending it. So the brigadier told me to come in with my battalion and help to defend this admin box area. So we took the battalion, less one company. One company had to remain behind with the 3rd 14th Punjab Regiment, still up in the hills next to our own division, the 5 Div. When we got into the box, the Brigadier Evans said to me, the Japanese have now arrived at Tong Bazaar, 12 miles to our rear, and that the 7th Division headquarters had been overrun. Nobody knew exactly what had happened to them, but that I was to do what I could to put this place into a defensive attitude. He said that I must keep two of my companies in mobile reserve for counterattacking and only use one company for static defense. And I got in touch right away with Colonel Cole. Colonel Cole was the commanding officer of the 7th Division Light ACAC Anti-Tank Regiment, and he had been in charge of the defenses of the admin box up to that time, using whatever troops he could find. So I got in contact with him and discovered what he'd done. And as a result, I put C Company into the static defense role, and they occupied a hill just above the eastern entrance to the Ngoki Dock Pass, which overlooked the box. It was obvious we must hold that hill at least, if nothing else.
Had C Company recovered from its earlier...
It had recovered, but it was still weak. They only had two platoons. They could only muster two platoons. So I put them up there, and the A and B companies, we left them in the paddy fields in the centre of this position, so where they were able to move off in any direction whenever required. Colonel Coles had mustered every possible man he could find to defend the place. He had everybody at it, all the Indian followers and the sort of admin people like field supply depots and ordnance dumps and so on. They were all holding their positions and acting as like soldiers. So we continued with that policy, and we found that by lending out our own troops, putting one British soldier in a sort of platoon of bakers and butchers and so on, lent great moral support to them. They liked to have this chap with them, and it backed them up no end to have one British soldier stiffening them up. Well, and then we got the news that General Maservi, commander of the 7th Division, had managed to escape from the admin box, from the headquarters at Tong Bazaar, and was coming back to Div headquarters. You know, he arrived at Div headquarters. I saw him soon after he came. I cannot remember now whether it is really true that he was wearing his pajamas or not. I just don't remember. I've heard the story so many times and I don't know what to believe now. One story is that he came in his pajamas. And I know that I saw him soon after he arrived, but I just don't remember what he was wearing. I know he hadn't got very much. He had to be kitted out from the Ordnance Field Park, and he had a sort of khaki shirt and some slacks. I think that was all they could find for him. Anyway, he came in, and Div headquarters, such as it was set up again in the admin box. And our brigade headquarters also, 9 Brigade headquarters, was also set up there in adjoining trenches. And my battalion headquarters was next to that in some more holes in the ground. And Brigadier Evans, General Massavi retained command of the 7th Division, but their two brigades were still out and about in the country. 89 and 114 Brigade were still out in the country. And he ordered 89 Brigade to move in and help to assist in defending the box, but the other two, 33 and 114, stayed out in the positions that they had already reached. Well, that night we heard sounds of firing and shouting, screams and yells coming from the direction of the main dressing station, which was in a corner of this admin box, at the back end of the admin box, sort of tucked away under a hill. But it wasn't really within a sort of proper defended perimeter at all. It was impossible to defend the whole perimeter. It just weren't enough men to do it. One had to rely on luck to a certain extent, and nobody thought that this dressing station would be attacked, but it was, and the Japs got into it and did the most appalling execution there amongst the wounded and sick who were in this hospital. And we could hear it going on, shouts and screams and shooting. And I was asked by the CEO of the Indian hospital, the medical officer, the ADMS in fact of the division, to counterattack the hospital and retake it, you see. But I said I couldn't. It was pitch dark by that time, and I said it's impossible for us to attack, as we couldn't tell friend from foe, and we should only end up by shooting all our own men if we tried to attack it by night. And we didn't know the ground anyway. It was impossible to put down any sort of covering fire, mortars or guns or anything. We'd only succeeded in making matters much worse. So I said, well, great reluctance, I don't think I can do anything about it tonight. And Brigadier Evans agreed that it was out of the question to try and retake the place that night, but that I would do so the following morning. So early the next morning, A Company went in and counterattacked the main dressing station and fought their way through it inch by inch. The Japs were still there in full force. They had made bunker positions in what had been the old wards. They'd also helped themselves liberally to all the food that there was going there and any drink ration that was lying about. And they had to be just winkled out inch by inch. We lost 15 men ourselves in that attack, but eventually got them all out of it, booted them out.
Did you see the aftermath of the atrocity at the station?
Yes.
What did you say?
Oh, horrid. They'd shot men lying in their beds. They just shot them. They'd shot several doctors too. They just lined them up and shot them.
What do you think can explain such an atrocity?
I think it was just their policy of trying to terrorise us, you see.
Did it have that effect?
it made everybody very furious and determined to get the better of them, which we did. Well, what happened was that the whole of the 9th Brigade B echelon was in a position just a little way from us on both sides of a deep chong, and this chong ran up into the main dressing station area, getting much narrower as it went up, but it was a well-defined channel. And that night, Japs started passing down this chong on the way from the main dressing station. After we'd counterattacked, they pulled out, and they started trickling out down this chong. And both sides of the chong were held by our B echelon personnel, muleteers, orderly room staff, sanitary men, quartermasters, storemen, chaps like that, nearly all old soldiers, and including the regimental sergeant major. And they twigged what was happening, and they just let the Japs have it, and they killed an enormous number of them in that place, which became known as Blood Nullah afterwards. And these were the chaps who had raided the main dressing station, so we felt we'd avenge that one. And they continued to come down this chong, although obviously it was an extremely stupid thing to do. They'd been ordered to proceed to some rendezvous or other, because it was at this phase that we captured a prisoner, and he had some documents on him which were swiftly translated, and we found that the Japs had given out an order that everybody was to withdraw to some rendezvous on some river or other leading absolutely straight through this Blood Nullah position, and they went on coming for some time afterwards.
How had he come to be captured?
Pippon?
How had he come to be captured? The prisoner?
This prisoner was wounded. Otherwise, I don't think we'd have caught him. And once the Japs were taken prisoner, they were quite prepared to talk. They didn't mind what they told. They'd tell you everything. He had a nasty wound, which already had maggots in it, if I remember rightly. And the doctor said, don't take the maggots out, leave them there, they're very good. They'll keep the wound antiseptic. So he was made a great fuss of, this chap, and eventually he went back to POW cage. I think he quite recovered.
Is that true about the maggots?
I believe so, yes. Yes, I believe it's quite true.
So he was well treated?
Yes. Well, that wasn't the end of it as far as the Japs were concerned, because I think the next thing that happened, I may be a bit wrong on my dates, but I think the next thing that happened was they attacked C Company's hill, as we called it, and they caught C Company off balance and pushed them off. C Company had to fall back down the hillside. Well, obviously, we had to recapture this C Company hill. So an attack was laid on with A Company again, supported by tanks of the 25th Dragoons. We had a squadron of tanks of the 25th Dragoons in the box. And we made a plan with them that they would support the attack with fire from their guns, you see, whilst the company was going up the hill. And when they reached a certain point, they would stop firing high explosive and change over to armour-piercing shell, so they could go on firing for a much longer time until our troops were really right onto the position. The Japs would think that they were still being shelled because they were getting this armour-piercing stuff, which was knocking about their positions but not exploding. So that attack went off very well, and the A Company went in with their bayonets at the last phase of the operation and turned out the Japs, and we were able to reoccupy the hill. We put C Company back there. A Company was getting slightly battle-worn by this time. They'd had quite a bit of casualties. They'd done a great deal of work, and they'd done absolutely splendidly. They were commanded by a fellow called O'Hara, Chris O'Hara, who was a pre-war company sergeant major in the regiment, and he'd been commissioned early in the war, and he was now commanding A Company. He was a perfectly splendid chap, very, very gallant, very determined, and the troops thought the absolute world of him. He was always absolutely right up at the front, leading every attack.
Was he an Irishman or a Yorkshireman?
He was a Yorkshireman, but Irish extraction. His father had come over from Ireland and settled in Bradford, like quite a lot did. I think he probably came over to work now on the potato harvest or something, but anyway, he'd settled in Bradford, and his son Chris and another son were both in the West Yorkshire Regiment, regular soldiers. He became a very well known character in the box. Everybody thought very highly of Chris O'Hara. He went on for a long time after that, until finally at Imphal, during the Battle of Imphal, he got shot, rather badly shot through the face, and had to have his jaws wired up, and that annoyed him extremely because he couldn't talk anymore. He was a very talkative chap. he was taken back to the base, still trying to talk faintly through his bandages. And he went home then. He was invalided at home to England, and he stayed on after the war for a bit. He got a short service commission, and he stayed on. He went out to the military mission in Greece, but eventually he had to retire. And I'm sad to say that soon after that he died of cancer. He was a great man. He got the DSO for his exploits in the Arakan and Imphal. General Meservey then ordered 89 Brigade back into the box to help to defend it. And one battalion of the 89th Brigade was the 4th 8th Gurkhas, were to take up a position outside the the box on a hill on the eastward side of the box. They were to take up a position in the hills there. The battalion got cut in half during its move back, and one half of the battalion went straight on and climbed over the Mayu range and got into the 5th Division area, and the other half tried to occupy this position outside the admin box. But before they had time to consolidate, they were attacked and driven back. And I was told then to recapture this place where they'd been driven back and hold it. So it was B Company's turn this time, and B Company with some tanks advanced via the right flank, and they got onto this position with the aid of the tanks and had soon recaptured it and occupied it, and the Gurkhas were reinstalled on it. There were various other little incidents. The pass itself, the Gokidok pass, was not possible, and General Meservey wanted to see how far down we could get. So he sent a troop of tanks with B Company and my B Company with them to explore down the pass. So they got a certain amount of the way when they were held up by a roadblock, and they were endeavouring to destroy this roadblock when they discovered that the pass behind them had been blocked by the Japs. So there was quite a fight there to get out again, but they managed to do so. They withdrew out of it. We did lose some men, including an officer. The wounded men were piled onto the tanks, and were shot up severely on their way out by the Japs, who fired at them, these wretched wounded people lying on the top of the tank. Well, we got out of that, but without achieving very much, we learned what we already knew, that the Japs were still holding the Ngokitok Pass. And then one of the positions round the box was called Artillery Hill, which was held by a heavy anti-aircraft regiment of 7th Division acting as infantry. And we had to put in a counter-attack on that. The Japs had gained a foothold on it. So I think that was A Company's turn again. And they did so, but a very gallant young platoon commander who'd only just joined the battalion was killed. That was all right. We were reinstated on Artillery Hill. And there was a final sort of massacre. And this anti-aircraft regiment did a lot of execution. Some more of these Japs. They put on a sort of final act of defiance and launched a raid on the box defences. And they ran into this heavy AK regiment, who dealt with them very summarily. And there were a whole lot more corpses to bury after that. We had to dig a huge pit with a bulldozer to put them in. I think there were about 35 of them, something like that. And that was that. And at the same time, we heard sounds of shooting up to our north and east. And the 26th Division was coming to our rescue. The King's Own Scottish Borderers from the 7th Division had come into the box and were lending us a hand. We had to do some sort of mopping up operations in and around the box, and the KOSB did that extremely well. And they were relieved our hard-pressed A Company. The casualties we'd had been pretty heavy, and we were down to rather a low strength. A Company could raise 2 platoons and B Company 2 platoons, and C Company only about 1 platoon by now. But D Company had not been committed at all. They were right out with the 3rd, 14th Punjab, and they hardly had anything to do at all, so they hadn't had any heavy losses. But of course we got no reinforcements all the time we were in the box. The wounded and sick were piling up in the hospital, but with no replacement. They couldn't be evacuated, none could be brought in. At the same time, the 5th Division on the other side, the western side of the range, had developed operations to open the pass, and they eventually succeeded. It wasn't at all easy, but they eventually got through to the box, and we were relieved. 26th Div had come down from the north onto the east side of the box, and the Japs had pulled out almost completely. So we were relieved. There wasn't any more fighting at the box. It was all over.
What was morale like amongst your men at the end of the fighting in the admin box?
Very good. Very good indeed. They were very proud of themselves and what they'd done, particularly A Company, who'd been absolutely splendid. They were very high morale indeed. Everybody, I think, admired the West Yorks very much for their courage and bearing in this battle. We really did bear the brunt of the show for several weeks. And I don't know what would have happened if it hadn't been for us there, because we were the only infantry as such. Other troops were acting as infantry, but they hadn't been particularly trained in that respect. They were anti-aircraft gunners and people like that. they did all right, they did their best, but they hadn't been trained like we had. And our training paid off handsomely.
What was the physical condition of the troops at the end?
Well, they were pretty worn and jaded. I mean, uniforms were in absolute tatters and rags, and nobody had had a bath for weeks. We managed to get a wash occasionally, but we were pretty filthy and dirty. The food had been all right because the air supply was going very well. We had our airdrops. We didn't get much fresh food, but we got plenty of tin food and the new American K ration, as it was called. It was done up in cartons, and it was pretty good, except that the whole thing tasted of chewing gum. They had sticks of chewing gum included in it, and that rather impregnated the rest of the ration. But it was perfectly good and perfectly sustaining. I don't think anybody was underfed, and there was enough water in the box for our needs. It was quite a plentiful water supply.
Did you know the names of the Japanese units you were up against?
It was 112 Regiment, I think. I think it was General Tanahashi, Colonel Tanahashi, I think. 112 Regiment.
Did you know that at the time?
Yes. Yes, we did, yes.
What do you think of the write-ups that have of the Battle of the Admin Box that have been produced since the war? Do you think they've been accurate, or have you spotted inaccuracies?
No, I haven't. I haven't spotted any inaccuracies. I think it's all been pretty good. General Evans has written one thing about it, as you know. Brigadier Evans, he was then. And then there's the spearhead general about Frank Meservier. That's pretty good. I think on the whole it's been dealt with very well. I haven't noticed anything that's caused me to rise up in indignation. I think everybody's got their due desserts.
What happened after you were relieved at the admin box?
Well, when we were relieved, the first thing was that the wounded were got away. That was something which cheered us all up. A big convoy of wounded were moved out. And then we marched out. We marched back over the Ngokidok Pass onto our side of the